year to be able to hear what they do. And again, as a church, we can't all go, right? We can't all go together. But one of the purposes of having people who've gone on missions experiences or seeing videos and things like that together isn't just for information. It's because some of the things that they experience and they live through and take in personally and some of the things they do, it's an extension of us and it goes both ways. And some of the things that our people and others we hear who've gone cross-culturally, we can take that and learn those lessons too. And it has a growth two ways. Though a lot of the focus when we go overseas is to bless and it's for a project and it's to do a specific thing for a specific time, it grows those who go and it can grow us as well. So as you listen this morning, I encourage you to look and listen for one thing that God's speaking to you. You may not have been able to go with them, but you can certainly hear what God is saying to you through their experiences. So we're just so glad that you can share this morning.
I'm going to call my team up. We, the team this year, you know, Mitch, Sue, Eric, our two young people, as you might guess, are working. They're working to pay tuition. So Lily and Tavis couldn't be with us this morning. So you get the adults. Just before I speak, I'm going to just ask each of the team members to share something that impacted them the most this year while they were in Peru on this trip.
This is the first time I've actually gone on a missions trip, so it was a special blessing. I'd always wanted to do it, and I think what really prompted me, I remember when John Cressman spoke, he talked about God stretching you, and I said, okay, I've been thinking about this for a while, so if I don't do it now, it's just probably won't happen. So I came up to Pat and just told her I would like to go on, and it was a blessing. The things that really impacted me was how the people, despite not having much, they do have an incredible joy, and they're just content, and I think we can really learn something from that. And it was a great experience because usually when I go on vacation, my wife will tell you this, I don't camp or anything, I just say, take me to the Hilton, please, now. So this was not the Hilton, I'll tell you. Dealing with the heat was something else. People would warn me about the heat and all that, but once you experience it, you really, I don't know how Pat does it because she can't wear bug spray and you get bitten a lot. And even when you do put something on, like you put a lot of lotion, insect repellent, you still, your skin will get hot because it's deep. Like for me, it was just getting hot after a while, so. But I enjoyed working with the kids, and probably one thing that really sort of touched me once when we were at a village, and I saw this one lady carrying the 7-year-old boy, and he had cerebral palsy. And I know my first cousin has a girl with cerebral palsy, and just understanding the issues they have, and then you can't even fathom how this woman will make a go of it in this jungle carrying this 7-year-old kid with cerebral palsy. So it hit me, and I really had to collect myself because it just, I don't know, the weight of it hit me. But God works in that area, and it was amazing to help the people.
Thank you. This was my third time into the jungle, and my family will tell you that I'm a last-minute procrastinator for packing, but I've become a real packer. And since I've come back, I've been unpacking all of the things that we experienced. But I was also thinking about all the bags that we unpacked. The pharmacy alone had 18 bags that we were trying to keep track of. And there was a lot to keep track of. And it was, it kept hitting me that all these people here had provided the funds and donations for us to be able to have all of these things in 18 bags to share with the people. And I don't think there was anything that we could have taken that we didn't take. We had pretty much everything, you know, within our term was scope of practice that we could do for the people. And in fact, we had so much that we were able to go back and we stocked the pharmacy at the Ogar. So for that, it was just very, very powerful for me to think about all of the stuff that we were able to take.
the team that goes every year does make a big difference. We bring food along to each village that we go to. And there was one point in time that I saw a gentleman walking across the field, and he had this plate, and it was just mounded over. And he was almost screaming at the people that hadn't left the village yet along in their huts. And the joy on him was like, I've hit the mother load, and there's food over there, and you gotta go. And he could just see him running across with his plate. And I'm thinking, you know what? These people are sometimes forgotten, but they know that somebody else cares, and that gives them hope.
Thanks, guys. I won't make you stay up here if you don't want to. You can. Just to follow up on what Eric said, I think that one of the things that we miss in a lot of the time in the pictures that we share and the stories that we tell is that maybe we haven't shared with you the impact of the food program when we do go into the villages. And this year, last year, and this year for sure, I know, I don't know what we've taken other years, 1,200 kilos of dried fish go on ahead of us. One boat did have a bag of dried fish. And we were like, can we offload this? but we send each village, so we were in three Shawi villages this year. We were in Alianza, which is a town outside of Yidimaguas. And so if you're looking at the map up here, this very small portion of the Amazon jungle region, and you'll see right in the center, the big kind of the black blob is Yidimaguas, where we start out of. And all of those little names, you're looking in Bolsa Puerto, the Yidimaguas region, the San Lorenzo region up on the top, and the Lopez region down here. We don't do so much down there, more San Lorenzo, Yidimaguas, and certainly mostly in Bolsa Puerto. And as you look at all of those villages, they represent probably 60,000 Shawi, individual Shawi, in all of those villages. And we have been in, I think, about 24 of those villages. So this year, I don't have a pointer with me, but up near the top there you'll see Monte Cristo, San Juan de, I can't pronounce it, and Libertad. Libertad is one of the last villages along the Piranapuera River. We've been trying to reach there for 3 years now, and we did, the water was high enough for us to get there. More than half the team had to go in pecky boats, but we did get our big boats up there with some story. But the three villages that we visited this year were Central America, Libertad, and Nuevo Junin. You may recognize Central America and Nuevo Junin. We've been there before. And those villages each received 400 kilos of dried fish, 100 kilograms of rice, and then there was an agreement to compensate the men of the church to go out and bring plantain from the jungle. And there are some pictures. You'll see some pictures of the feeding program, which we usually don't get to see. But because I had a pharmacist this year, I actually got to escape the clinic a few times and got around to take pictures. So we'll just kind of start those pictures going, Darlene. We'll just cycle through them. I hope just to give you a sense of where we were and what we were doing kind of as I talk. I was going to pull this up on my smartphone. I couldn't find it, so I ran to the back and borrowed Henry's Bible. So thank you, Henry. Every year, I think I share with you every year that I choose a passage for my team, and this year was from Jeremiah 29:11. I'm just going to read it to you. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity. And when we were making the way through the message, I remember Jeremy coming and speaking to that specific passage and how often we take it out of context and use it in our way. And for me, it is that passage is a sense of peace for me as I prep for Peru. But one thing that really impacted me this year was that sometimes I don't know if I'm going to say this right. Sometimes that passage is not about me or my team that I have a plan for you. Sometimes it's about using us as part of his plan for others. And what really impacted me this year was two things. The first being, I know we left without a doctor. And for those of you that follow any of us on Facebook, that was a concern for us, that right up until we left, we did not have a doctor. And my peace was that God does have a plan. And I knew that whatever that plan was would follow through. And Martha Gunther said to me just before I left, she said, you know, Pat, I think that God's plan for you this year is more an evangelical approach than clinic, but who knows, we'll see what happens. And right up as we left, we were right into the morning that we left, 10 minutes. We were loading the little tuk-tuks and the truck to head down to the river, and we didn't have a doctor. And as I was just standing, scooing everybody out of the area where we were eating breakfast, Susanna, who owns the hostel that we stay in, came in. She was like, Edamana Pat. She's like, come here. So I came over, and I'm thinking there's this young lad standing with her that he's maybe one of the new staff. I don't know. And she just goes, here. And there was this adorable little guy about this big. And he said, you know, the older you get, the younger they look, right? For any, she's kind of going, ooh, he's just like a young kid, you know. And he says, hello, I'm Enrique, and I am the doctor. And we were just like, woo-hoo. It was just incredible. And, you know, this was one of the places where I think that for once, it wasn't about my team and God had a plan for my team. It's God had a plan for others, and we were just a cog in that wheel. And, you know, I think that it's exciting when you realize that you are that little cog in the wheel. And I think that we are a cog in Enrique's wheel, because this was a young man with a tremendous, tremendous heart. He was, for any of you that have been with me and have worked with the Peruvian doctors, they're very difficult. They don't want to work for the Shawi. They do not want to be in Balsa Puerto. They do not want to be in Yurimaguas. The Shawi are viewed as dirty Indians. They do not want to be there. They don't want to be in the jungle. And yet here was this young man who came from Iquitos, was excited to be with us, worked like a slave. Like he just never gave up. We put 250 patients through clinic on some days. We had an advanced practice nurse with us that could do some diagnoses, but Enrique was amazing. His heart was huge, and he was really seeking the Lord. So he was roomed with John Hamill, who is a young man from Guelph whose heart is for long-term mission, and also with one of John's friends, Richard, who came from Iquitos to translate. And I'll tell you, when you get in the room with John and Richard, there's no escaping who they serve. And Enrique spent his whole 8 days rooming and in the boat with John and Richard. And the impact for him was huge. He came to our debriefing. And I would encourage you, if you would, to join us to pray for him, because I know that God has a plan for Enrique. The other cog in the wheel that we were a part of, when you look at this, and God's promise is, I will bring you out of captivity. In many ways, the Shawi have been held captive by poverty and by sin, the same way many of us are. When we have seen the change in the villages, in those villages where there is a pastor, where there's a church, where there is a strong Christian presence, the difference is staggering. And for those members of my team who have no faith, who come along in humanitarian purposes, they see the difference. And it's our opportunity to share with them. But I see over the years that God is bringing the Shawi out of their captivity of poverty and hopelessness. Before I left for Peru this year, I was reading a book called When Helping Hurts, rather. And it's talking about short-term mission and what our approach is. And when the authors interviewed people around the world in what we call first world, so us, our concept of poverty is focused on they don't have enough clothes, they don't have enough food, they don't have, you know, they don't have maybe fresh drinking water. They don't have, you know, there's something about that. Those are all tangible things. When they interviewed actual people who lived in poverty all around the world, Nepal, Africa, India, Peru, parts of South and Central America, and even the extreme impoverished within our own country, the response was quite different. The response was the sense of shame, the sense of guilt of not being able to provide for their family, the shame of coming home and facing their children and not being able to feed them, and the sense of hopelessness that there was no way out of this vicious cycle of poverty and that there was no hope for their future and no hope for their children. And in the 9 years that I've had the privilege of working with the Shawi and being in Peru, I have seen these villages. I have seen God working in these villages in a mighty way. And I've seen them begin to rise out of that poverty. And the villages, Nuevo Junin is a great example. Norma and I were in Nuevo Junin 4 years ago in 2010 with a small team. It was a small church. Going back this year, there's a beautiful sand well there with fresh water. The generator wasn't working. They couldn't pump it from the well up into the reservoir, but Eric's father was with us. He's a mechanic. He fixed that. It took him several hours, but it was exciting to see the water gushing out of the reservoir. But they have fresh water. They didn't have that 4 years ago. They have a huge church. They have three pastors. They don't drink masato. The children were much healthier in terms of intestinal illnesses. They were, they came from other villages. The sickest children we saw were from other villages. We have seen this rise out of poverty, and I believe that God has used us in a mighty way. And I believe that it stems from his promise. If you seek me, then I will bring you back. And as I see the Shawi seeking him, we could take a lesson. We could take a lesson in their unabandoned worship and in their heart to share with everyone else, in their heart to... they seldom sit down and have a conversation without one another that it isn't about, do you know the Lord? Have you met Jesus? I watched them rise out of that poverty. There are wells in almost every village we went to. I will speak to Central America. It's my third time in Central America. There is no church in Central America. We have tried 3 times in 8 years to plant a church in Central America. It is the same dirty, unprogressed village that I visited the very first year I took a team out. Norma was with me. It was, like you've often heard us say, it was the village. It was like living in a barnyard. That village has not changed in 8 years. It has not grown. It has not changed. The health post is in deterioration again. There is no church there. There's a lot of masato being made. The children, the intestinal problems of the children, the malnutrition was stark contrast to the villages we went to later where there were churches. It's hard to share that sometimes with friends and family who have no faith, who don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It's hard to share that because they kind of go, yeah, whatever. But I tell you, I know that the difference is incredible. And in the book that I was reading when Helping Hurts, it really narrows down what was Christ's commandment when he sent us into all of the world. It wasn't go into all the world and clothe them. It wasn't go into all the world and feed them or build them a house. It was to go into all the world and share the gospel. And when we begin with sharing the gospel, that is when their lives change, and that's when everything else changes from within. And that's what we have seen with the Shawi. That's what I have witnessed. And for those that have been back with me several years, it has been a privilege and an honor to be part of God's promise in Jeremiah to the Shawi. If you seek me, if you call me, you will find me, and I will bring you out of captivity. And I see him bringing them out of that captivity and that cycle of hopelessness and helplessness. And we are a part of that as a church family. I thank you for that. I thank you for the faith that you put in me every year to spend your money wisely, to use it to advance the ministry there. I thank you for your prayers, for your for just everything that you do for us in making this work possible. And thank you for being the part of that cog of the wheel with us, that we are bringing the Shawi. We are part of it. There's a huge ministry, as you know, that goes on in Peru in the background. But the money that we leave down, every year we're usually able to leave somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000 goes into an account in Yurimaguas, and that pays for ongoing medical expenses for any of the Shawi who require travel to Tarapoto or to Lima for further studies or for further medical help. So it doesn't just end when we leave. There's an ongoing, there's a much ongoing work there. The farm is advanced incredibly. It's so exciting to be part of the farm ministry. There's a young lad there, Joe Tice, who is an agronomist from Delaware, and he has an honors degree in animal science and an honors degree in plant science, and it has been his goal over the last 2 years to build a dairy herd. And I think this year he finally gave up. The grasses are just not enough nutrients for cattle. And a few days before our team arrived in Yurimaguas, Joe had a herd of goats brought in, and that is now the focus is the goat, is to build a goat herd. And he has it worked right down to a science of how many chickens this family needs to reproduce, how many chicks you'll lose to predators, the heat, everything that is at risk for the chicks, how many eggs that flock will produce, and if they do this and they do this, at the end of the month, every month they will have this many chickens to take to market. So it is an ongoing, sustainable ministry that they're building there with the Shawi, along with the cacao plantation, along with a goat herd to produce milk. There's just so much going on. I could talk for hours about it, but I did really mostly want to share with you that privilege of being that cog of the wheel and being part of God's hand with the Shawi to bring them out of poverty and to give them a hope for the future. And that's certainly what we saw when I went back to Nuevo Junin, was a great hope amongst the people. As you might have seen, we saw a lot of new babies this year, and I always get the babies. They're really beautiful. There's the growing families there, and those are the villages where the churches are, where there's a huge pastoral presence, where there's a huge presence of Christ in the village. They are growing. They are booming. And thank you for your part, and thank you for your share.
So I didn't prepare Pat for this, but that's okay. She thinks well on her feet. I thought I'd just ask, what now? What takes place now that the team is back? Are you preparing for another trip? How do you guys debrief? How do you process this stuff? What's happening now?
We have a big debriefing time before we actually leave Peru, because it is hard because we are spread right across Canada. We are all pretty much on Facebook and email and things together. We are all coming back to Eric's and my home in July to have a meeting together, a time together to talk about it. We have our own mission team, of course, that's focused on helping us come back as well. Some challenges with that, and of course, I'm barely home a week, and we've barely left Yurimaguas, and we're already talking like, what about next year, and what do we plan, and we have to realize, too, the missionary we're working with is 60. That's not old. I'm 59 this year. But it is a bit overwhelming when you're down there. Susan may be on sabbatical next year. There's lots of things we have to think about. There's a new ministry in Iquitos with another tribe further out. There's lots to be done in Peru, believe me. And it won't stop with the Shawi. We'll think about where it is for next year.
And you mentioned this this book you read. I read it last year as well. It's a great book. So taking some of the experience you had, how you've seen this long-term investment that hasn't just paid off because of humanitarian work. It's been the Lord first and working in their lives, in their hearts, and in their village, and their water supplies, and all these things. What are some practical lessons we can learn from that for how we minister to our neighbors and our community?
I wrote a whole sermon on this. I actually, the day before we left, I actually had the opportunity to speak to the Owen Sound Association of Baptist Churches on short-term mission and exactly this topic. And I had three lessons that I learned. I'll just share two of them with you. One, find your ministry and live it. We are all called to a ministry. We are all called to the Great Commission, whether it is abroad, whether it's in our workplace, in our neighborhood, in our family. We are all called to it. It doesn't matter what ministry God has called you to, find it and live it and stick to it. Not all of us are called to overseas mission, but there are three ways that you are called. You're called to pray, you're called to give, you're called to go. But whether it's overseas or it's backyard ministry, we're all called to it, all three of us, all of us to those three things. So that was my first lesson. Find your call and stick to it. When the earthquake happened in Haiti, so many of my colleagues at 3M said to me, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you're not going to Haiti, Pat. Like, my gosh, you do all this stuff." And I said, "I'm not called to Haiti. I'll support it." We sent money. I cleaned out my entire basement of every medical supply I had that year, and it all went to Haiti with the Mennonite Central Committee. And we started recollecting for Peru right afterwards. But God did not call me to Haiti. God has called me to Peru. And so find your corner and stick to it. My second learning, very much through my work with the Shawi and my involvement with Missionary Ventures, has been, I know the old adage, teach a man to fish, seems like a glitchy cliche, but it is really true. Teach a man to fish, and that's what we're doing. We do it every day in our lives, right? We teach our children, we teach our coworkers how to live their life, how to live it for the Lord, and that too really comes back to teach a man to fish, and the value of teaching the man to fish rather than to give and to do for them all the time is to give them a sense of well-being, a sense of worth, and a self-confidence that we want to instill in our own children. We should be instilling that in everyone we're working with within the Christian faith as we disciple them and as we mentor them. It's about teaching them to fish. It's about teaching them to stand on their own two feet and to look to Christ for leadership, not us.
So there's three ways we help. There's rescue, and there's relief, and there's development. Rescue happens when the bottom falls out of someone's life, natural disaster, job loss, health loss, all those things. Relief is the next phase where you've picked them up, you're caring for the ongoing needs. Shawi people, they don't have some of the resources they need. The development is that the critical part. And I just appreciate that you shared the stark difference between villages. Villages who've not only listened to training and care and love that was shown the same to everyone in a physical way and an emotional way through love, but also with the love of Jesus. And so we thank you for pulling this together every year, living your lifestyle for this, for taking others, for helping us understand this morning. So I just want to close by praying for you and your team and the Peruvian people and the Shawi and worship team. You can come up while we do that. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for Pat and her